morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We hope you had a good 4th. Here's to hoping you have an even better 5th. July 5th is underrated.
Okay.
Completely underrated. People forget about it, but they shouldn't, because we got a big program for you today. The KD and Kyrie connection has long been in the making.
Breaking news.
Breaking
tell
news.
You July what I
5th
mean.
Underrated. I always thought it was properly rated.
Underrated. Mm-hmm. Zion Williamson begins his Rookie of the Year quest, but we start with Rafael Nadal. Big news there. I'm kidding. We would never start with Rafael Nadal. We start with the biggest story yet to
good
happen in
Kyrgios
the NBA.
Though.
Ah, very nice.
Of course.
The Kawhi watch. Nick does know everything. The reigning MVP had the decision narrowed down to the Clippers, Lakers, or Raptors. But according to friend of the show, Chris Broussard, it is now down to a coin flip, with the Claw doing some deep soul searching between the Lakers and Raptors, between Hollywood and Drake. All right, Nick, what do you think? What will this decision tell us about Kawhi Leonard?
I think it's a really good question because, as we've talked about a lot, very few people know much of anything about what makes Kawhi tick, about who Kawhi is. Chris, you've known him since he came into the league, and even you don't know Kawhi incredibly well, you as well as you know some other people in the league, and you know him better than just about anybody in the media. But I do think, and we've said this before with teams and the draft or if free agency decisions, your actions almost always tell the truth. And when you look at these three options, whichever one he picks will give us a window into what's important to him. If he picks the Clippers, which with respect, I know Broussard's saying they're out of it, but let's just say for the time being that all three teams remain. If he picks the Clippers, he is saying not only is going back to home-ish important, but I want the biggest challenge possible. I want to climb an even taller mountain than the one I just climbed in Toronto. If he picks the Raptors, it makes total sense. It's not just that trust and infrastructure and what the Raptors earned through him is important, but also he wants to defend his title. We've had 73 guys beat, or 73 times the team's won a title in this league. 69 of those 73, their best players come back the following year. The three times it hasn't happened, George Mikan once because he retired. Michael Jordan once because he retired. Michael Jordan a second time because he retired. Kawhi Leonard is the 73rd, and we will see what decision he takes.
Wow, that's interesting.
And if he chooses the Lakers, much like the Clippers, there's the home element, but it will also be about, I want to play with the best possible players and have the best chance at not getting my third championship, but getting my third, maybe my fourth, maybe even my fifth. So whichever decision he makes will give us a window into what is actually the most important to him and what things matter to him but don't matter that much. So I think that's the information we hopefully should get in the next 24 hours.
I think people are just going to draw a bunch of conclusions based on what they think he should do. I don't think we're going to know that much about Kawhi after this. I believe Kawhi is going to make this decision, or someone's going to make this decision, and then Kawhi is going to go about getting some type of rest, allowing his body to repair, preparing for the training camp, no matter where that is. And he believes he's going to be a better basketball player at 28, because let's look at a year ago. He was coming off a significant injury where he missed most of the season. You can just basically cancel out, he missed the season. Almost the same thing Kevin Durant is facing, because when Kawhi came back, there was a lot of mystery to how healthy will he be. So Kawhi, there is no rehab this offseason. It's just rest, and he's going to be ready, a better player, when they start the season next year, no matter where he decides to go. That being the Clippers, Toronto, or the Lakers, it's about championships. Now, that's what it's always been about with Kawhi, but because people don't know him, what they'll say now is, oh, he went to the Clippers, he wants the biggest challenge. He went to the Lakers, he wants to play with LeBron. Toronto, the chemistry they had and being able to repeat, he wants to play there. Yeah, all those things could be true. But Kawhi Leonard is about winning, and he doesn't care as much that great players are there. That's the reason why he looked at the Clippers with KD. That's why he was going to look at Brooklyn. That's why he was going to look at the Knicks. Not only because the location, doing business, his brand moving forward, But he doesn't mind that there's great basketball players. Kawhi Leonard is not trying to avoid great players playing with them. He's not trying to have this narrative be that, oh, you know something? I went to the hardest spot. No, he's going to go to the best spot for him to continue developing his basketball game. To me, it's a matter of, did the Lakers and or the Clippers, were they able to overcome the trust factor that he has in Toronto? And he trusts the team, he trusts the coaching staff, he trusts the medical staff. So for me, that's all this is really about. We are not going to know Kawhi Leonard after this decision.
Do you think, Nick, that his legacy will be altered in any way based on what decision he makes? And let's assume it is either the Lakers or the Raptors. The Lakers, well, he won, but he really wants to win, and this is guaranteed. Or the Raptors, you know, he did it sort of with this group of guys that got close but couldn't quite get there, and he helped them get there. Do you think his legacy is altered either way?
Well, I think that is almost impossible to answer until we know the end result. I mean, of course, what he does in what will be the prime of his career, I would argue last year was the first year of his actual apex prime. Maybe the year before would have been, but he was injured.
He was hurt.
So he is now really just entering that 3 to 5 year stretch where you are at your absolute best as an athlete and as a basketball player. What he does with it, that is how legacies are forged. But because he has two titles already, one as a role player when he ended up winning finals MVP, and one as the only superstar on a roster, I don't believe you can go backwards legacy-wise. And so he has already established himself as this tier Hall of Famer. He's already a Hall of Famer. That's what he earned last year in Toronto, in my eyes. Like, you can't be a two-time finals MVP and the unquestioned best player on a champion that ends a dynasty and not be a Hall of Famer. So he's already there. He can just go forward, and Chris would say his cement's still wet, like his cement's not dry. He can continue to forge his legacy. You go to LA with the Lakers or the Clippers or the Raptors, if he wins another championship or championships in either place, it only further enhances that.
When he gets to LeBron James's age and or tenure in the league, if he's still playing basketball, let's just do age-ish.
Yeah.
What's his best chance of winning championships? And that's with the Los Angeles Lakers. So the Clippers have never won. All right? Toronto just now are winning one time with Kawhi. And if he decides to go back there with the chemistry he had back there, pay higher taxes, live in another country, that will be saying something about him.
Yeah.
But for Kawhi, man, this is about championships and which organization are going to support me and my quest to be the best player in the world and get as many championships as possible. To me, the only team that presents that are the Los Angeles Lakers. Jenny Buss is doing it now, trying to get them back on track after 6 awful seasons, falling in the track of her great father who won all those championships. So for me, with Kawhi Leonard, the Lakers become very, very hard to beat. And do I go back to San Antonio? Didn't he request to be traded from there?
Mm-hmm.
And where did he request to be traded to?
The Lakers.
Yeah. So for me, if he goes back to his original request, what does that mean? That he was true to it. He really wanted to get out of San Antonio and get to L.A. I believe there's going to be an announcement today.
I was just going to ask that. Really?
I do believe there's going to be an announcement today.
On Sunday, their quest for a record 4th World Cup has all come down to this. Megan Rapinoe, Alex Morgan, and the United States put their legacy on the line against the Netherlands. The FIFA Women's World Cup final coverage begins Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
First 15 minutes, most important 15 minutes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
See if they can get off to a good strong
yes.
start. All right, don't miss the exclusive trailer debut of Disney's new movie, Mulan, Sunday on Fox. And it is now time for Empowered to Win, sponsored by Disney's Mulan in theaters this March. Though Kawhi's decision is taking what feels like forever, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving teaming up in Brooklyn was quite premeditated. The two reportedly planned on playing together last offseason. And though we will have to wait a year to see the two on the court together, the Nets have bragging rights. What do you think, Nick? Do KD and Kyrie need to win a title to validate their move to Brooklyn?
Well, I feel like their decision's been validated in this regard. We expected it. No one is questioning it. No one is saying it lacks some competitive integrity. And we look at the team they chose to go to and say they are absolutely viable championship contenders once KD gets healthy. Nobody feels like they're ring chasing there. Nobody feels like they're stacking the deck. And nobody feels like they each went to, if they had gone to separate teams, like, wait, you're going there to prime your career out? Nobody feels, so I think the decision's already been validated. For their careers individually to be validated, yeah, they got to make some NBA finals or a NBA finals and win a title. Like, this is, for Kevin Durant in particular, this is the only thing he has left to do. And for Kyrie Irving, a title in Brooklyn alongside Kevin Durant would vault him up the list as far as best wingmen, not actual wing players, but Robin to someone's sure. Batman we've ever had. If you can win a title alongside LeBron being a huge part of it, not just the shot in Game 7, how about the 41 points he dropped in the lead-up to Game 7? And then for KD, we've said for a couple years what the only thing he has left. He's already won a league MVP. He's won a couple finals MVPs. It is, can he win a title as on a team that hadn't won one as the unquestioned best guy? So that's the validation each of these guys are looking for. But I don't think if they don't win a title, if after 4 or even 3 years, which it could be the case, they both have opt-outs, they go elsewhere, we're going to say this was the wrong decision or they screwed up, because we expected this decision, and basketball-wise, it makes sense for both of them.
Yeah, I'm going to look at it very, very different. I'm going to look at it as two guys that we didn't know. They were friends. They wanted to play together. That's obvious. So it's a major accomplishment. Because both of them are accomplished players. Both of them, they don't have to win another championship to be able to validate their career. Because we don't know how the Eastern Conference, we don't know what's going to happen in the West. Like, we don't know the storylines. If Kevin Durant goes on to be an MVP in the NBA and they don't win a championship, I believe he'll be all right with his career. He's got Giannis, he's got Joel Embiid. They got all that competition. Boston eventually is going to have a championship caliber team. So we don't know the storylines. We don't know who they might lose to in the finals. What if he does like LeBron, where he's not able to get the one championship LeBron did in Cleveland, but he takes his team to the finals and he does 38,
right.
8, and we're like, oh no, he's not justified unless he wins a title in Brooklyn. No. These guys are already champions. We can't keep moving the finish line on guys. Like, that's typically when you come in the league, is this guy going to be a starter? And be like, oh, is he going to be an all-star? Oh, is he going to ever lead his team? Oh, is he going to be an MVP candidate? Oh, and can he win a championship? Most of the time in the NBA, it's about winning championships. But then after you do that, you know what people do?
How many more?
Oh, but yeah, they move it. But because that, if you've already reached that goal, these guys have individual goals, and I believe they're going to accomplish a lot. I don't believe championship is the thing that validates them. If they have a great run of 4, 5, 6 years, if Kyrie can stay healthy, if Kevin Durant can stay healthy, because those things, we don't know what's going to happen. So if Kyrie gets hurt, then Kevin Durant's chance to win the championship, they aren't good. But now we're saying his legacy hinges on one of his teammates. And we just can't continually move the finish line for professional athletes.
And Kawhi is the person that looms over all of this. Because unless Kawhi picks the Clippers, which I think is the least likely at this point, either decision Kawhi makes puts the Nets and KD and Kyrie in potentially a rough spot. If he goes to the Lakers, then all of a sudden, KD is potentially, if he makes, when he comes back,
right,
makes an NBA Finals, up against what the type of situation he joined, where it's like, man, I could average a triple-double in the Finals like LeBron did. I could average 35 a game in the Finals like LeBron did and lose 8-1 over the course of 2 years because the other team is so much better. And if Kawhi stays out East, well, then they got to get through Kawhi and the Raptors just to make the NBA Finals, whoever comes out West. This is why I've never been a count the rings guy. You and I talk all the time about LeBron versus Jordan. Stuff like this is when, to me, the best argument for Jordan is what we were talking about before the show today. We were thinking about the best rookie seasons ever. Michael Jordan, first year in the league. How about he gives you 28-6-6? Just immediately. Rookie season, just a dominant player. That, to me, I don't want to say that's more impressive than one of the rings, but it's stuff like that that validates guys' individual greatness, because championships are team accomplishments. Like you mentioned it. It's not Rafa Nadal. It's not one-on-one where where you control everything. And so I understand the question because for Kevin Durant, it's the only accomplishment left. The only thing left for him is a championship outside of the incubator of Golden State.
Sure.
But it is, we're talking about degrees of greatness in my eyes.
So let me just tweak this a little bit. Take the championships out of it. How good are these two players? And we talk a lot about their personalities and how they'll fit, especially with the rest of the team and how they get along. But as far as an offensive combo, how good are these two? What can you expect to see on the court?
Kyrie Irving's the best dribbler of the basketball God has ever made. He can dribble the basketball on the court in the games. I'm not talking about no street baller and everything. I'm talking about NBA regulations, referee. He's the best handle. Isaiah Thomas tells us that he has the best handle ever. And we thought Zeke had the best handle until we met Kyrie. He can score the basketball at a high level. He's a tremendous offensive player. Kevin Durant is the best offensive player to me in the NBA when he is 100%. He's the only person legitimately to me that would be fighting LeBron James as far as the best player ever. Him, Kawhi, LeBron, that's the only group right there. Kevin Durant, he's the most efficient scorer ever, and they can play well together. But and people love to play with their friends. LeBron wanted to play with Melo, wanted to play with Chris Paul, was never able to pull it off, was able to do it with Dwayne Wade. So they're a special combination, and if they want to be together, I expect even to see some better basketball than what we've seen from them.
Chris's point shouldn't be lost. You've got one guy who is, I don't want to say universally considered, but universally in the argument for best ball handler ever and one of the most creative guys under the rim we've ever seen. And then Durant, I can't call him the best scorer ever, but most efficient mid-range guy of his size, it's not even question. It's no question about it. And so you have those two guys coming together. Basketball-wise, might actually be a bit of a better fit than Kyrie and LeBron were because LeBron is so much more of a distributor than KD, needs the ball a little bit more than KD needs it. KD can distribute great for a guy of his size, but he's not the distributor LeBron is. So I think the fit is excellent. But I also think for Brooklyn, this is one of those things where it gets late early. And by that, I mean these guys are on four-year deals. They both have opt-outs after year three. So year one, we're crossing off. So we are going to be looking at the 21 season and the 22 season. How good is this combo? There's not a ton of – they're not two rookies. It's not Shaq and Penny coming together at the beginning of their careers. They are already in the primes of their career. The next time we see KD, he'll probably be 32 years old coming off an Achilles. So when they do play together, the fit that – in our mind's eye, we see that needs to show up almost instantaneously for them to be able to get through Giannis and Embiid and Kawhi if he's still there, whatever Boston turns into. Indiana's trying to be a relevant team. Miami got Jimmy Butler. So all those things are relevant, which is why it could be successful without them winning a championship. Just not the level of success KD and Kyrie went there for, KD in particular.
Here we go. Stories to start your morning sticking with Kawhi. According to the aforementioned Chris Broussard, the Claw is doing some deep soul searching between the Lakers and the Raptors, which means it is the Clippers who are odd men out. See, at this point, is there any reason why Kawhi would pick the Clippers?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you know Kawhi Leonard, Kawhi said it's not as important that there's other players on the court. And what he did last year in Toronto with a proven coach, who he has a great deal of respect for. They have an overall defensive mentality, a lot like Toronto, and they got a lot of respect for Jerry West. So, yeah, I could see him going to the Clippers because the Clippers are Toronto, but out west.
So if he picks the Clippers, because what everyone agrees right now is these three rosters is presently constituted without Kawhi, the Clippers are the weakest. And so if he picks the Clippers, to me what that will mean is the draw of Southern California was enormous, but he was not able to get over the trust deficit with what's happened with the Lakers. That he didn't feel like he could trust the Lakers for this portion of his career, but he wanted to get to LA, which was his goal when he initially demanded the trade out of San Antonio. To me, that's what this would signal. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's likely, but that's what it would mean.
All right, moving on to free agent Danny Green. When asked if the Lakers could be a potential landing spot, Green simply said, they have two expletive superstars. It speaks for itself. Nick, how big of a role could Danny Green play for the Lakers?
If they don't get Kawhi, if they get Kawhi and they were able to get him with the mid-level, that would be unbelievable. But let's just assume no Kawhi. If they were to get Danny Green, he was one of the top free agent targets we listed before this whole process started if they missed out on the superstars. Excellent defender, spectacular three-point shooter, coming off his best three-point shooting season of his career at 45%. Mm-hmm. He and Kuzma could kind of almost alternate in that third scorer role depending on the night.
Yes.
He is the exact type of player they need, especially if they don't land Kawhi. It would be outstanding.
Yeah, he's the kind of player he needs because he's also going to help in the backcourt. Yep. LeBron's not going to be able to log all those minutes. Him and LeBron can switch off between the one and the two. LeBron would be very, very comfortable. You mentioned the shooting locker room. He is a glue guy for the locker rooms. Him and LeBron have experience with his young part of his career getting started there in Cleveland when he played for a number of different teams.
All right, moving on to the Women's World Cup. Now the U.S. is going for the record fourth trophy. They'll look to take down the Netherlands. Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern on Fox. See, you expect the U.S. to coast past the Dutch?
No, I never believe in championships being able to coast. Anytime as an athlete you don't have respect for the opposition and they have made it to a World Cup final, so you realize they have played some great soccer. They've played the greatest soccer this club has ever played. It would be one of the biggest upsets in World Cup history. I don't think they have two starters that could start for our team. I mean, we have a deep team. We're really, really talented, and you could see that in the quarterfinals and the semifinals. So I believe that our women are going to take this match seriously after getting through France and England in those last two matches.
A $100 bet on the Dutch nets you around $600. The U.S. are massive, massive favorites. Here's what I expect. I expect the U.S. for the first time since the group stage to play a full, complete 90-minute game. I didn't think they played their best game against France. Rapinoe saved them. I thought that they defensively had some lapses against England. Mm-hmm. We got very fortunate on the penalty kick save and on one offsides call. If they play a full 90-minute game, they should not only win, they should win by a couple of goals. The Dutch, according to all the experts on Dutch soccer, of which I am not one, they do not have the horses in this one.
Well, good news for you. I can't do a Dutch accent.
So okay, good. I don't even know what that would sound like.
Ending with Eli Manning, the 38-year-old quarterback who's gearing up for another season of football, first saw his top target, Odell Beckham, traded to Cleveland, then watched his replacement, Daniel Jones, get drafted sixth overall. But Eli is staying the course, heading into season 16, saying, quote, I'm not rushing into retirement. CC, what do you make of Eli's comments?
This is something I know that when I left the NFL after 16 years, it was a 99.9% chance. I'll never have a better job than that. And most NFL players, they realize that. And at the end of your career, staying in that locker room and still being able to compete, man, it's always a challenge. But no one's in a rush to retire. It's one of the great jobs. It's one of the great titles he'll ever have in his life. Starting quarterback for the New York Football Giants. Two-time Super Bowl champion. That's how he gets introduced everywhere he goes. Yep. Why would you be in a rush? Now, Eli hadn't played great football, even though Dave Gettleman said he's seen him play some great football. I haven't seen it. I watch NFL films. I watch every highlight show. I watch every morsel of football. And to me, Eli has not played great football. So I do understand what Eli is saying. When they draft a kid in the first round, you can't come to minicamp and be like, yeah, I'm looking at retirement. Because as soon as you have a bad game, people be like, you're not focused. So he's playing that game. I know that I got to hold this guy off. Eli Manning is not. He believes he can play more football, even if it's not with the New York Football Giants. And given the success, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees, Roethlisberger, they are not in a rush to quit. I don't know why we keep asking this. Tom Brady, 2 years ago, oh, man, Tom Brady's got a great life. He's getting ready to quit. Yeah, right. He's been to 3 Super Bowls in a row. He brags about how his wife makes more money than him, but he signed up for at least another season and not looking back. Why should Eli Manning? Why should he? Even if you don't like him, don't think he should be the starting quarterback, why should Eli Manning give up one of the rare jobs that you can ever have in the world?
Well, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. You'd like to go out sort of on even somewhere close to the high that you were when you...
That's all make-believe. Didn't we just do a Disney movie advertising? That's all Disney.
Right, but maybe that was 2 years ago. The further you get from that, you don't think that taints his reputation at all?
Well, listen, he's going to, almost to your point, he's going to now, we would imagine, unless the Giants all of a sudden have a much better year than we expect, end up with his career with a losing record in the regular season. That's what the last few years have done. I think he's 2 games over .500 as we sit here today. And so unless Daniel Jones starts week one or unless the Giants are way better than anyone expects, I think that's to your point. But his legacy is those two Super Bowls and who those two Super Bowls came against. And the two highlights we will see forever. That those spinning away from Patriot defenders, throwing the pass to David Tyree, the helmet catch, and the dime to Mario Manningham in 2011, mm-hmm. one of the best throws and one of the biggest spots in any football game ever played.
And the slant and go to Plaxico Burress.
Absolutely, for the touchdown after the helmet catch in 07.
Yes.
So those are there. And you mentioned these other quarterbacks. I'm going to mention a different older quarterback, his brother, which is he saw his brother, people question whether or not he was finished, go to a different team, win an MVP.
As a non-factor,
win an MVP, not as a non-factor.
Oh, the next year.
Win an MVP and go to two Super Bowls, the last one when he was really on his last legs, but win it. And so when Chris said, you kind of said it in passing, for the Giants or for someone else, I think that is for the audience, I think you got to recognize that is the mindset of these great players is, listen, I'm going to win this job. I know they drafted Daniel Jones, play him eventually, but I'm going to play so well this year, they have a tough decision. And if they decide to go with the young guy, maybe someone else will decide they want me. Now, that's what Eli thinks. What I think is Eli's been done for 2-3 seasons, and Daniel Jones is going to get that job. But, of course, he thinks he can keep going. He's always going to think he can keep going. Probably Brett Favre was rumored to be thinking about it. He's been out for 7 years.
I know.
It's been rumored that he was going to come back. So none of that should be surprising.
All right, let's switch gears. All eyes on summer league action tonight. Literally something I've never said before. But when Zion Williamson makes his debut for all to see, it's pretty must watch. Pelicans' number one overall pick will be going up against former Duke teammate and now Nick Xavier, R.J. Barrett. The 18-year-old Zion has been waiting for this moment his whole life, saying, quote, "This is the part you dream about when you're a kid." All right, Nick, what has to happen for Zion to really be a star?
Well, if we're talking about long-term star, let's just assume health, because obviously injuries can derail anybody. But assuming health, I think what has to happen, we are already on track for, which is being an organization that's not going to try to microwave the process, that's going to make off-season moves that have him in mind and his development in mind, meaning they have supplemented their roster, but they have not gone out of their way to add veterans at his position that are going to be expecting minutes. They went out and prioritized J.J. Redick in free agency, knowing he's a guy who's going to need spacing on the court. Monty Williams is a guy they have, or Alvin Gentry, pardon me, is a guy they have enormous confidence in his ability to play at a pace that will help Zion Williamson, and surrounding him with young talent that can exacerbate in a good way his positive qualities, his athleticism, his help side defense, his ability to get out in the break while filling in the blanks with veterans who will do the things he can't do. So those are the things that need to happen early in a player's career, because I don't believe a player can, I think it's very, very difficult to see for a player to become a superstar immediately. But you can be derailed. You can be taken off track like D'Angelo Russell was in the Lakers through his own doing or the organization's doing, to where it takes a couple years for you to re-find your footing to get back on the trajectory we thought you'd be on. So right now, I think the Pelicans have done all the things you would want them to do if you were saying put Zion in the best possible position to reach his maximum potential.
You guys know I talk about it all the time. I believe in institutional success. And that's mean putting the right people, putting the building blocks around, building the foundation around the house compared to, you know something, let's put a roof on it and let's just sell it to the people. And that with David Griffin and the ownership with the Benson, Mr. Benson passed away, his wife took over, and People question, will they be able to concentrate and run the Pelicans the way they've run and had success with the Saints? They've done a tremendous job from the beginning, keeping Gentry, hiring Griff, and the moves that Griff has made, even when they won the lottery. Griff didn't say they were going to draft Zion.
Right.
I mean, it was very strategic, the roster that he put around him. And then you mentioned some of the pieces. I believe some of the pieces that might be even more vital are guys that came out of situations. Ingram, he's from Duke, top five draft pick. The organization gave up on him already. How to work on your skills. Now, his body frame, from one standpoint, is at the other end of the spectrum,
is Zion.
Ball, everything he's dealt with, the media attention, his family, an organization. Oh, we're going to put you in the rafters on the first day. So those expectations, the roster that they have, talent-wise, experience-wise, and also common things. Guy from Duke, a guy top five pick. I believe all these things really get Zion off to a head start on being, because this is what people get mixed up. Don't try to be a superstar. You need to be an all-star first before you become a superstar and keep things in the right order. He's off to a great start.
So tonight's game, this is a primetime game. This is a sold-out game. Tickets are going for upwards of $400 to watch him play. Do you remember another more anticipated Summer League game? I mean, who was the last one that came out that played Summer League and people couldn't get a ticket to see?
LeBron D. Wade, but that was before Summer League was the giant thing it is now. Summer League really has exploded in the last 5 years as far as interest and excitement. A few years ago, remember Lonzo, De'Aaron Fox in Summer League, and then Lonzo didn't play, and people were questioning why he didn't play. Summer League, though, there isn't really a precedent for this because it's kind of like the NFL Combine in that it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger over the course of the years, even if there were hype prospects. But listen, Zion's going to be dealing with the most hype of any guy his rookie season since LeBron.
But is that good or bad for him? So my point was, do you think it's good for him to see that people can't get a ticket to watch him play Summer League? Does that help him?
This is what he should expect. If he was dreaming of being a star, this is what I try to tell you all the time. Hey, guys, those dreams come with the ingredients to handle this kind of stuff. It's not no big deal. He came from Duke. They got the star treatment no matter where they were. And we have seen this. You talked about Jordan. You went back to Wilt, Oscar Robinson. Mm-hmm. The type, when you are a generational talent, all that stuff does not matter, because it's amazing how the attributes that come with handling that ability come with these great athletes. And I believe that Zion, we have seen how he's handled it. I believe this, because he's got the institutional support, he will be able to handle it. But typically, it comes on the insides with these guys.
And if you guys remember the highlights we ran 2 years ago, I guess it would have been, when he was in high school, those were high school games for a much less mature person, because he was 16, 17 years old. Standing room only high school games to see him. He dealt with that. Duke was I don't want to say circus, but you talk about traveling with Jordans like traveling with the Beatles. Duke was the most followed college basketball team we've had maybe since the Running Rebels in the early 90s, late 80s. I'm trying to think of another, the Fab Five with Michigan. The level of interest at every step, and he's dealt with it all. I watched his press conference after Duke got knocked out of the tournament, and he's supporting teammates. He's acting like an elder statesman.
Right.
Zion does seem to have the makeup for this, and it's not out of nowhere. It has been building to this level for quite some time.
My concern is, what's the proper weight for him? He's listed at 285. He looks like he's around 300 right now. You can't continue to fluctuate with your weight, and regardless of what ability he has, getting up and up and down the court with 300 pounds and doing that for over 10 years, that could be a problem. So I know he's an unusual size and an explosiveness. I understand that. But what's going to be the proper weight for him to play at and for him to be able to discover that as quick as possible?
Back here, first things first, look who's here, Sports Illustrated senior NBA writer Chris Mannix.
What up, Mannix?
If people could see behind the scenes how rapidly you guys get ready to go on the air. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, like how you flip a switch. Like right there.
Yeah, no, this is
good to see you.
Don't tell the family business.
No, I'm just saying. Like, it's impressive.
I was wondering what he was going to say.
I had no idea.
Compliment. It was a compliment.
We appreciate it. No, thank you.
Jenna's out there on Etsy doing stuff.
Jenna's not on Etsy. I can't believe you knew that Etsy was. Kawhi Leonard, Mannix, has reportedly narrowed his decision down to the Lakers and Raptors, and though most would love the opportunity to play with arguably the best player of all time in LeBron James, well, Kawhi's just trying to carve out a legacy of his own, and the shadow of the king could hinder that. But according to a report, LeBron would be willing to, quote, pass the torch to Kawhi. Chris Eubine, LeBron can and would pass the torch to Kawhi Leonard?
First, I don't really know what that means necessarily. Like, is he willing to
maybe take a lesser role?
I mean, like, willing to get, like, let Kawhi take a leading role in the same way that Dwayne Wade let LeBron take a leading role down in Miami in the early 2010s. I can see that. I mean, look, LeBron knows that his window is closing. He's got maybe 3 years left to kind of be an alpha on a championship team, and Kawhi Leonard represents his best chance to win a championship. So do I buy that LeBron is okay, you know, not averaging 25-plus, not being an MVP candidate? Yeah, I do buy that. However, I don't know that it's ever not going to be the LeBron show. Like wherever LeBron is at, he is going to be the focal point of that team. So no matter what he says, I don't think in reality it can actually come to fruition.
You're talking, when you say the LeBron show, you mean from noise, media, questions, things like that, not necessarily the 48
minutes necessarily on the court. Yeah.
So LeBron has quietly evolved his game over the last 3 years. There's three seasons in his career he's averaged 8-plus rebounds. It's the last three seasons. There's four seasons in his career he's averaged 8-plus assists. It's the last three seasons plus 2010. He's gone to a more distributor kind of do-everything role on the offensive end. But he's had the necessity to be a high-level scorer 2 years ago in Cleveland because they had traded away Kyrie. They had no one else. And last year with the Lakers because there wasn't another scorer you could rely on. There wasn't another all-star on the roster. I think LeBron has been ready to transition more to point guard-ish play for a while and has not had the roster to do it. Now, I don't know that that means end of game, I'll just go stand in the corner. I don't think that's ever been who he is. But he also... It was 2016 in the timeout, tie game. See, what did he tell Ty Lue? Let the kid take the shot. Kyrie wanted it in game seven, and LeBron signed off on it. So he's never been a selfish player. He's always been more equipped for a secondary role than a guy like Kobe, who always had the mentality of it has to be me, it has to be through me. But I believe LeBron would go into next year as the best player on the team, or he and Kawhi are just neck and neck as close as you can get. And I think you are typically best if your best player is your leading decision maker. That doesn't mean your leading scorer. That doesn't mean the guy that takes the most shots, but the guy who is dictating the offense. And as great as Kawhi is, the one part of his game that is not fully evolved, if you will, is playmaking. So I see a lot of LeBron facilitating, LeBron figuring things out. Is that taking a lesser role? I guess that depends on who you're asking and what it means.
When have we seen this before? Was this like a Kareem Magic kind of thing? I mean, historically, how do you even put this in perspective of two superstars, this talent and caliber, we haven't really seen play together, and one passing a torch to another?
Yeah, this is very difficult. When you are a superstar like LeBron James, the one thing that does help him is that in his DNA, he is a natural passer of the basketball. So what I can go on is a couple things. Shaq, at an early age, when he was teammates with LeBron, said, man, he's a basketball savant, Chris. His memory, memorizing stuff. Oh, man, see, you know, stands the coaches say the sets and the LeBron telling him, and he's taking over practice. I'm like, damn, where we get this boy from? You know, play with a guy that's so smart, see? But that's the way he explained his overall building understanding of basketball. One of LeBron, in his the highest percentage of critics that he has, it comes from, oh, he's so unselfish. Oh, you know something? He's not like Michael Jordan. And if he was like Michael Jordan, this would be a different conversation. I would try to tell you guys, hey, man, Kawhi need to go somewhere else. Because Michael Jordan right now, he still think he can take Kevin Durant, LeBron, right, one-on-one. Yes. And that's not going to change. LeBron, he's not that way. And I know for a fact, let LeBron, in his conversations with Kawhi, he was expressing, things like this. And LeBron is not a guy that he would not tell Kawhi the truth. And you could see him playing. LeBron still has room to grow his game. He can still get in the post. LeBron can be, if you want to play small ball and put LeBron at the four or the five later in his career, but this is the natural transition for LeBron James. If he wants to play 20, 21 years, he needs somebody. Because you know something? In practice, he can't hang with Kawhi every day. He sees that. That was the one thing. Denny Green didn't have to tell me, hey, Chris, you know something? We're going to turn this over to Randy Moss. I trained with him. Shit, I knew. I knew what was getting ready to happen. LeBron is a smart guy. He just didn't get stupid overnight. He understands Anthony Davis. He understands the Lakers, their legacy. He understands Kawhi. You know what he can do with Kawhi? Hey, Kawhi, I don't care who they play. Kawhi, go out and get that guy.
Right.
James Harden, go get him.
Go guard that guy every night.
And Damian Lillard, go get
and
him.
And Kawhi's always done that. And by the way, I would argue just quickly, that when we had seen in the regular season his last healthy year with the Spurs and last year in Toronto, there's a reason Kawhi was all of a sudden out of Defensive Player of the Year discussions, because in the regular season, when he became the go-to guy offensively, he had to take a lesser role defensively. If you have Anthony Davis and LeBron, he still might be the go-to guy offensively, but it's such a lesser pressure offensively. He can really be the claw defensively that we had seen him in the playoffs and early in his career.
And he benefited, and Kawhi benefited from having Pascal Siakam there, who could just absorb that defensive role. I do think that a fair comparable is what happened in Miami. I mean, remember in Miami that first year, you know, it kind of was a tug of war between LeBron and Dwayne Wade over kind of whose team was it, who was going to be the alpha with that team. They still had tremendous success, but they lost in the finals. I mean, Dwayne said this many times. After that year, he decided that I'm going to take a step back, that I'm going to allow LeBron kind of to be the alpha on this team, and it paid dividends. Like, that type of selflessness, if you want to call it that, I think can work effectively with Kawhi.
Just real quick, I'm going to bring up a team you're very familiar with, though, that did work in year one, 2008 Celtics. And it was because the three stars they got all were very different players, very different roles. We knew what KG's role was. You knew what Ray Allen's role was. You knew what Paul Pierce's role was. And it instantly worked. The reason that, to me, this Big Three is the potential to be so special, there's so little redundancy. There's so little of what Anthony Davis does best is the same thing. No. What LeBron does best
is... No overlapping.
There's minimal overlapping that you can have with great players at different positions. And so that in that regard, it reminds me of the 08 Celtics.
The one counter to that, though, is that those Celtics got together, and the one thing they had going for them was that none of them won a championship.
Right.
And that they knew this was it. Like, this was their only chance to put together either one or more championships, and that was really influential in that
And
team.
I think the glue behind this could be Kawhi's personality. He's not as needy. Anthony Davis, not as needy as LeBron. That's what probably makes this go like what the Celtics have.
Back here with Chris Mannix. Nothing says Friday night like NBA Summer League.
Yeah.
Woo! Tonight, it's the much-anticipated debut of Zion Williamson. Pelicans' number one overall pick will be going up against former Duke teammate and now Knicks savior R.J. Barrett. The 18-year-old Zion has been waiting for this moment his whole life, saying, quote, "This is the part you dream about as a kid." Mannix, what has to happen for Zion to be a star?
I tell you, that game is going to be packed in the Thomas and Mack Center tonight. Like, that will be close to sold out tonight in the Thomas and Mack
Center. It's already sold out.
It's already sold out?
Tickets are, I mean, up to $400
already. It's going to be wild in there for a summer league game where only two guys are on the shelf. For Zion to become a star, it's the same with every other player that gets drafted high. The jump shot. Like, how effective is he from three-point range? Because
I like it. He's not in the courting, dating, and everything. Listen,
no, just go right
let's
to
get
it.
To the business.
Well, like, that's, all right, that's it. Like, that's what it boils down to. Like, I think he's physically going to be impressive. I think defensively he's going to be impressive. I think athletically he already is impressive. But can he develop that type of range? Now, we assume that you can spend some time as a stretch five. That's what a lot of scouts have told me, that they will see Zion playing the five at different points in his career. If he can step out and at least be a threat, doesn't have to be this effective, like, 40% three-point shooter, but if he can be a threat from three-point range, his athleticism is going to make him downright dangerous. So, to me, it just boils down to, can he be a dangerous three-point shooter?
So the stretch five thing, I would take some issue with those scouts to a degree because he is not – I compare him to Blake Griffin at times as far as his game coming out of Oklahoma, the athleticism, big body. But he's 3 inches shorter than Blake. I mean, Zion's 6'7"-ish. Mm-hmm. And so I know Draymond plays the five at times. Draymond is also, though, has – all-time defensive instincts that help him. He makes the play before he can make the play, despite his limited athleticism and height. So I don't know how much five you could see him play in big spots, but I agree with you. That's the part of his game that needs to be rounded out. Now, he doesn't come into the league with no jump shot whatsoever. This isn't Giannis, but Giannis, by the way, was the 15th pick, the 14th pick. He did not have the hype. He was 6 points a game his rookie year, and he was real thin. This isn't Ben Simmons, a guy who refused to shoot in college just like he has in the NBA. We saw Zion have a passable set shot at Duke, that three-point shot in the low 30 percentages. Mm-hmm. Now, he's going to have to change that shot. That set shot, he's not going to be able to get off in the NBA. But you're totally right for him to become the league MVP candidate that I think he's projected to be. That's the part of his game that's missing. But for him to be a star his rookie year, he just needs to do the things he already does well. And he just needs to be put in a position to do those things. Get out in transition, help side defense, offensive rebound, and go bang on people like that. He will come into the league as one of the five best athletes in the NBA immediately. That I truly believe. And I think he can average 18-plus points a game without the jump shot. It's the jump shot that would then make him take him, as you would say, from fringe all-star to that superstar tier, which is where I think all of us project him to be eventually.
Are you worried at all about his weight? I know you touched on a little earlier, and we kind of gloss over it. Like, oh, when the season starts, he'll be ready to go. But you had some concerns earlier.
I worry about all kids when they get their grown man body, how they handle that.
What does that mean?
Well, it's been proven that a man between the ages of 20 and 30, his body's going to mature a couple different times. And in doing that, does he have the discipline? Because, yeah, I know he can play with that weight now. But say he gets 5 years in the NBA, get a couple playoff series under his belt, start playing internationally, play for the Olympic team. You know, can he start to handle it when he gets in his mid-20s? Charles Barkley would have been a better player if he could have stayed in shape. Shaq, he'll tell you, he would have been a better player. He would have had less injuries if he would have been at a comfortable playing weight. We've seen other great players where they don't manage this part. This is just as important as his jump shot. The one thing I do disagree with you at, right now, if Zion is on the basketball court, you cannot run up on him because you know he will explode past you. So that set shot is going to be
dangerous.
The first thing that's available for him outside of getting outside in transition. I do believe we're going to always watch Zion. We have to watch him, though, as a developing player compared to the first round pick. Because look at the other players, the expectations we put on that number one pick. But ultimately, if you're just trying to, listen, one thing, Mannix got it from the beginning. All the rest of this is just, I'm not trying to say the same thing as him. I'm not trying to say the same thing as someone else. If he does not develop a jump shot, it will be hard for him. Nick Saban talks about the different levels of development. And a lot of people get satisfied with being good. But if you want to be elite, if you want to be special, it takes special types of discipline to be able to get there.
Yeah, and physically, I'm more interested in what he looks like between his first and second years. That's usually in the NBA when guys just reshape their bodies entirely. When they go through an entire season, they work with strength coaches, and those strength mm-hmm. coaches identify what needs to change, and they come back in that second training camp.
Yeah, they typically don't have enough time
right.
between the NBA combine, the draft, going to summer league, and then the season's
it's
getting
fast.
Ready.
It's September training camp rolls mm-hmm. around. You can't do it. What benefits Zion and his potential to become a star is that a lot of guys that land in this number one spot wind up in dysfunctional franchises
yes.
in different organizations. He is stepping mm-hmm. in to one of the more functional bad franchises that you're going to find. The Pelicans are completely different than what they were in the last couple of years. David Griffin has reshaped that team, and he signed guys that should benefit Zion. I mean, you bring in
yes.
like a J.J. Redick type that'll teach not only professionalism in the locker room but be a shooter on the outside. You have Alvin Gentry, who is a disciple of the Mike D'Antoni offense, who's going to play up and down and play to the strengths of Zion Williamson. I think his growth and his ability to become that superstar is going to be accelerated greatly by the fact that he's with that team and with the structure that it provides.
Two quick points. One on that. Chris said, you said it before the show, and I was trying to think since then, does he walk into the best position a number one overall pick has walked into since Duncan with the Spurs? As far as as far as infrastructure, coach, GM, and roster, where you are usually have the number one overall pick because you were a travesty, because the team was awful. There's the rare instance where the Magic get it when they already have Shaq, but that's, you know, that's once a generation, if that. The other part of this that I want to add, he will come into the league better defensively than any player that I can remember that was not drafted just because of defense. You have a guy like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, drafted number two overall, saying he'll figure out he's drafted only because of what he was defensively. Zion's drafted because he's such a great offensive player, but usually rookies are in totally over their head defensively. I don't think that'll be the case for Zion. I think he will be a positive defender on the weak side from day one.
Also watch tonight, and it's just something people just take for granted. Watch the energy Zion plays with. Every game I've ever watched him play, high school, being college, anything, he always plays with a high level of intensity. Going after rebounds, trying to block shots, out in the fast break. That's one of those special qualities that I believe we see first time tonight, and it continues throughout NBA career.
Quickly, to your point about the defensive aspect, offensively, he's going to benefit from Alvin Gentry. Defensively, the Pelicans have an assistant, Darren Erman, is one of the best defensive assistants in basketball. He is going to bring out, I think, a lot of the pluses in Zion defensively.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.